like to welcome you today to On Point, and I'm your co-host Don Allen. With in Studio A, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing?
Real good, Don. Good to have you back with us. How's it going?
It's going great. It's been a while. Just we got a lot of stuff to catch up on today, and like to get into it. I know that you wanted to jump off the top of the hour with this Herman Cain building, gaining popularity here in the Republican forefront runner, I guess, to become president of the United States.
Well, certainly the polls, whoever controls the polls, I mean, polls are controlled by, individuals, organizations, etc. Polls apparently indicate he's now the front runner. I know CNN and MSNBC were identifying him in some poll as the front runner, if you will. Apparently, Rick Perry has lost some of his appeal. Rick Romney has been called a member of a cult. That's real nasty.
Yeah.
Well, you basically try to stay out of that religious thing. We can play the race card, but, people try to stay out of that religious thing. But, Mitch Romney is a Mormon, and, this Reverend Jeffries down there in Texas really went after him, raised the question that he's not of the religious hue, if you will, to be president of this Christian United States of America. The only thing is that Mormons have been around a long time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I just kind of wonder how you just make it appear that they're a bunch of bad folks that quick. But Herman Cain, my man, Herman Cain used to be here in the Twin Cities. He worked for Pillsbury Company.
Oh, you did? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No,
okay,
I didn't.
Herman Cain worked for the Pillsbury Company, and then they put him in charge of their pizza operation down there in Miami, and he went in there, and the book shows that Herman did real well. I knew Herman kind of well. Herman was on a couple boards that we were on back in the 70s, if you will, early 80s. Herman Cain, young Negro at that time, kind of ran around with, some of the more educated crowd, if you will, belonged to some of the right clubs and et cetera. And, of course, being an executive at Pillsbury, gave him a certain entitlement, if you will. And then he went down to Miami, did real good down there with the pizza company. And then he took a job with Sprint, if I'm not mistaken, and wound up in my hometown, Kansas City, where he was appointed by first Bush as chairman of the Regional Federal Reserve there in Kansas City. And that's what's really given old Herman the kind of background that he's displaying on economics. I mean, he's really doing quite a job. In fact, he comes across, if you can imagine, a black person coming across as the most knowledgeable with respect to economics, budgetary matters, and et cetera. And then after he left there, he went down, relocated in Atlanta. I know you mentioned a year ago that you had heard him on Blog Radio because he had a program similar to one that we have here. So Herman has kind of caught the fancy, at least according to how the conservatives are putting it out. I saw the beloved Reverend Lowry was on this morning on a CNN program with Don Lemon, and Don Lemon was posing the question if would it ever come a time when the both respective parties would be putting up a Negro candidate, Barack Obama on one side, Herman Cain on the other, I mean, kind of thing. And Reverend Lowry said, well, don't think it'll happen in my lifetime or yours either, young man. But he did admit, Reverend Lowry did admit that years ago, before the deaths and slash assassinations of people like Martin Luther King Jr. and others, that they had thought that they would never see a black president, but he in his lifetime, as he put it. But anyways, Herman seems to be the front runner, if you will. Maybe we got a couple callers that remember Herman. They used to hang out with him and kind of party with him, black tie and stuff. And, I mean, it wasn't like Herman went into, the local joints or anything like that anybody knew. But, yeah, Herman was here. In fact, at one point he wanted to be on the Urban League board, but we really didn't have a spot for him. And then, like I said, he got a real good break when Pillsbury sent him down to Miami to run their pizza operation. I think it's Papa John's. I think that's company owned by it was a subsidiary of Pillsbury. But anyways, Herman Cain in the front, if you will. Dan, get that old phone number out, man. Maybe somebody may want to call and give us their thoughts on my man Herman Cain, now the front runner in some polls for the nomination for President of the United States on behalf of the GOP.
Wow. And that call-in number is 877-572-4288. Again, toll-free call-in number is 877-572-4288. That's very interesting that based on the conduct and the lack of outreach in the Republican GOP's statewide and in all 50 states, that Herman Cain is moving that far ahead. Because, you know, here in our, or as you say, in our beloved Shangri-La, you know, we have a GOP that could give a dang about the outreach in the minority ethnic community, or even for that matter, people of color. And Mr. Edwards, just as a sidebar to what you said about Herman Cain, you know, locally here we have a gentleman by the name of Chris Fields, who's he retired from the Marines after 21 years, and he's actually threw his hat in the ring during the state fair to run for Congress for the 5th Congressional District. And and I had called him up to ask him, I says, hey, well, what are you going to do to get those votes that Keith Ellison normally gets? And he didn't have an answer, so maybe one day we'll have him on the show and quiz him about some issues, and I think that's going to actually put him in a tight spot, to say the least.
Well, yeah, because like I said, with the emerging certainly popularity at this moment, understanding we're still 13 months away from the first Tuesday in November, which is Election Day. But to see old Herman, make the kind of move. Now you have to understand in a couple of so-called straw votes kind of thing that they use in the so-called primaries, like you know, remember Michelle Bachmann, remember how she was a scandal, she's dropped so far down, they're saying that, and she's laying off staff and et cetera, they're saying she may have to bail out, but you remember she won in Iowa, and they were praising that and talking about that this made her a comer and et cetera. Well, Herman Cain won in Georgia and Florida.
Wow.
And you got to understand, both of those states have a tremendous number of electoral votes. And, boy, when I saw that Herman, I kind of expected he would win in Georgia because he was known in Georgia. He had blog, radio program, a couple other things there. He was working, doing some things in Atlanta, if you will. But, boy, when I heard that he had won in the Republican stronghold of Florida, caught everybody off guard, if you will. I noticed the pundits, as we like to refer to them, political analysts and commentators, or, you know, try to dismiss him by indicating, that's just kind of, that's kind of a sham. You know, that's folks who don't like this, that, or so forth. Well, you know, 4 years ago at this time, they were saying the same thing about a man by the name of Barack Obama, junior senator out of a place called Illinois. Remember that?
Yes.
And dismissing him and indicating that Hillary Clinton. In fact, I can remember at Miss Brazil, you know, who now, you know, at least bumping up President Obama. I can remember Miss Brazil indicating that Barack Obama didn't stand a chance. You know, in fact, she was here at a dinner, an Urban League dinner.
Yeah,
2007, if I remember correctly.
Actually, 2008. It was.
It was in May 2008.
Yes,
that's right. Donna Brazile came here, bless her heart, and she told us that, you know, that Hillary Clinton was the candidate, was the only one that could get it done and could win against John McCain and others. And lo and behold, Hillary Clinton's now Secretary of State in Barack Obama's cabinet. I mean, you know, so you can't tell. I mean, Herman may do some things. Now, here's something the Reverend Laurie said, though, Don, and, you know, hopefully some, you know, a couple people may want to call in. He said the real test, though, if you really have an authentic candidacy and campaign going, is if you're bringing in the kind of money that your ranking is displaying. And he's absolutely right. Now, Herman's not getting no money.
No, he's not.
You know, and so if you're not getting no money, it means that there's some kind of sham going on. And how much of a sham it is, only the so-called experts can speak to it. But anyways, I mean, for the purpose of transparency and reality, Herman Cain on the move, baby, as the standard bearer for the Republican parties at a time when some of Rick Perry's people are saying that Mitt Romney is a abnormality, if you will, politically as a Mormon. He can't win. His religious credentials aren't in place. So, hey, what more can you say? But what else we got, man? What's happening here locally, man? What's going on?
Well, you know, they got that Occupy in Minnesota downtown going on actually right now and yesterday with the group of 1960 rejects. Is that what I want to say? Yeah, that's exactly what I want to say. To make some kind of political stance on jobs and the rich and et cetera. And I had a chance to drive by there, Mr. Edwards, and we had a guy that we know here locally, Mel Reeves, was actually speaking, and it's kind of interesting to ask
him. Oh, who is Mel representing? He's representing
who? He's probably representing Higher Minnesota, you know, with Mr. King and those guys over there, and Will Seeger.
Oh, Louis
and,
King?
Yes.
Major King. Okay.
Major King, yes.
Yeah.
And so I was very interested. I texted him a couple times and asked him to call into the show to explain, you know, his position and his platform at Occupy Minnesota or Occupy MN, because that group seems like, you know, there's been some there's a lot of criticism of the Tea Party when it first started, especially Nancy Pelosi saying that it was Apple Church, it was fake, it was funded by, like, the Koch brothers, and this to me, you know,
the Koch brothers out of
brothers,
Santa Barbara, California,
yes,
or San Bernardino.
Exactly, and so I'm looking at this, and it seems like a well-oiled, well-organized machine down there that is not, you know, the population that should be down there, and maybe some of our African-American flagship agencies that maybe should have people filtering down there and asking for their fair share or their 40 acres and a mule, it's just not happening. And it even brought me more concern, Mr. Edwards, because I'd like to open the show up a little further with this. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. 877-572-4288. Now, Mr. Edwards, I've been telling you on a sidebar, you know, I've been really busy the last couple of weeks working my butt off in school and doing a couple other things and organizing and writing a procedural process for this group called Winning the Future Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
And I'd like to share this with you on the air because at this point I'm pretty frustrated because for 4 months now, we know that in April, Dr. Timothy Childs went down and shook hands with President Obama, broke bread with him and his wife and President Obama's wife. And President Obama gave him a mission, a nonpartisan mission to come back here and do Winning the Future Minnesota, which is the focus on entrepreneurs, technology, business, and education. Mm-hmm. And he had the full range to customize this, especially for Minnesota. We know that in Minnesota that there are some disparities that make us the worst in the nation for just about everything, from joblessness to education to veterans
home ownership,
on the streets,
things like
home
that.
Ownership.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the black, it's a white, Hispanic, Asian, it's all across the board. We're just the worst, period. Mm. So it was really funny. We found out last week that our first couple of meetings, we had Robin Steinberg from the governor's office and DEED, which is the Department of Department of Employment and Economic Development, DEED. Robin, a Caucasian female, would show up and be at these meetings, and they want to push it toward Obama's campaign reelection. And we sat firmly, those of us on the steering committee, and said, no, this is going to be Minnesota needs something different. We don't need anything to be on, out of respect for President Obama, he's running for president, that's great. But we need something different in Minnesota. We need to focus on jobs, entrepreneurship, education, and business.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the first three or four meetings, the governor's office didn't show up anymore. And Lou, this guy named Lou that was the major fundraiser here for President Obama in 2008, didn't show up anymore. And so, Mr. Edwards, last week we found out that Governor Dayton and his staff decided not to give Winning the Future the $10,000 that they committed to him 4 months ago. And they're actually doing their own thing based on Obama's jobs program.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. And so it was really
interesting. I mean, have they set a date, Don? And have they
given
a location? Or what? Where's it going to be?
Next week at River Center over in St. Paul. It's $99 a person. And what the governor's office
did. Why not
did,
just $100?
Yeah, exactly. And what the governor's office did is they took word for word almost the whole template that we had for Winning the Future. They built a website, they funded it, and they left basically Dr. Childs and Women in the Future Minnesota out in the cold. Although we are going to launch next week down at the IDS Crystal Court, it was a hard blow because we told the powers that be, Dr. Childs, and the people that were re-editing the work that some of us did to not email that over to the governor's office, that they're going to plagiarize you, that they're going to do their own thing because they're going to see how good
it is. Wow.
And so he kept emailing stuff over there. So now we have a situation where Governor Dayton is doing a politically driven jobs a seminar, an all-day forum and seminar. And that just brings me back in mind of the North Minneapolis Economic Summit. You know, what happened out of that? Nothing. You know? And so this is a dog and pony show.
That's the event, just for the listening audience. That was the event that was held on the 30th of March this year at UROC, the UROC facility, where the governor came in. First time governor had been over here in 20 years, but governor came in and talked in terms of his heartfelt concerns based on the presentation and documentation and everything, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so that just kind of, some of us, that put a bad taste in some of our mouths, and you know, we're still going to go ahead and make it happen next week for the launch, but it's we're not going to go and make this a partisan kind of event where we're working under the campaign. But it was really funny, Mr. Edwards. Someone that both of us know, Mr. James Stroud, he was actually at Dr. Child's office for a conference call with the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back to me and called me in shock. He said that the person at the White House that called said that they're switching Win in the Future from the White House initiative to President Obama's campaign initiative. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and Mr. Stroud said that's not what he signed up for, and left the conference call. Uh-huh. So that was pretty interesting that they would do that. And since we were going to be nonpartisan, where we are, you know, Governor Dayton and his staff decided to take it on and run with it and call it under Positively Minnesota.
Okay. And now, where is the president's legislative initiative right now in the Congress? Maybe we need to talk about that. Maybe we can get a call in, or somebody can call us in and give us an update, if you will, because every time I see a news release or a political or public affairs program, they're talking about his jobs program is on sputter, if you will, at best. And in fact, Senator Harry Reid, who is the majority leader of the United States Senate, it said we're not going to be getting to the president's jobs package right now. And, of course, President Obama is not only leader of the nation, but he's also leader of the Democratic Party the last time I looked. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what I'm not understanding. So what's happening here then? I mean, we're going to make it a political issue as opposed to social reform, in other words, more jobs. So what's Congressman Keith Ellison's? Maybe we can get someone from his office or something maybe to give us a call, a heads up. I mean, I know that, you know, they're listening. So where is the president's legislative package? Do we know?
Well, no, we don't know. And, you know, I've yet to see the jobs bill, but I know there was a report out, if I recall this right. Voice of America is just a trusted news and information site. It says President Obama urges senators to pass jobs bill. But the thing with the jobs bill is there's no need really to have a new jobs bill, because if you tear down into it like they did on the BBC a couple of days ago, Mr. Edwards, is that part of that jobs bill, it resembles really closely the stimulus that was put out when he first was elected. And we know the stimulus went to banks, China, and some universities.
Well, we got to pay the Chinese. We owe them a lot of money now. We got a lot of debt with the Chinese.
Got to pay the Chinese. You know, we have billions of dollars invested with the number one communist country in the world. And so they have billions of dollars invested in us. And so it's kind of interesting that you would put a jobs bill out that would not look at the systemic reasons or the root core cause of what's really happening. And part of this is, this was addressed 2 weeks ago with Springboard Development's Lenny Chisholm, Mr. Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner or Secretary LaHood was in town. There was Mr. Mark Dayton. There was Congressman Keith Ellison. There was Mayor Chris Coleman. And Mr. LaHood was talking, and they asked for questions. Well, that was the wrong thing to do, because Mr. Chisholm spoke up and told him that MnDOT has received $5 billion in such and such a time, and minority contractors in Minnesota barely got $2 million out of that $5 billion. Mm-hmm. And so when that happened, Secretary LaHood said, well, I didn't know that. And Governor Dayton, I have it on film, Governor Dayton rushed to the podium and bumped LaHood out of the way and said, I'll answer that, because we have a long way to go with MnDOT. We have, and he kept having excuses. And now you have Peter McLaughlin, Commissioner Peter McLaughlin in the background, just turning his head with disdain, like, how can these Negroes ask that question with the Secretary LaHood here? You know, just you could see it so close in the video that I had to put a bubble over it just to point this out.
Let me ask you a question, Don, on that, though. Now, does Lenny have, because I remember he was on the, because this time last year, or a little bit earlier even, about 14 months ago, he was calling in this program, was talking in terms of how poorly he had been treated. Does he have standing? And if so, why doesn't he file an administrative complaint with the sister that was here a year ago in the meeting, they wouldn't let you in. Why doesn't Lenny and maybe a couple others go ahead and file an administrative complaint against Minnesota MODT? Does he have standing to do that?
I guess he does. He also has standing to do that with Daryl Turner at the Federal Highway Administration,
yeah.
FHA. And because, you know, Lenny has put in a lot of requests for information. But but anyway, make a long story short, here you have Congressman Ellison sitting to the right of the screen if you're looking at the video straight on.
Mm-hmm.
He did not look up one time during this back and forth between Mr. Chisholm, Secretary LaHood, and Governor Mark Dayton. He stared into his cell phone the whole time, playing with his cell phone like he didn't hear anything, he wasn't there. And that was just totally shameful. And I actually I pointed that out on the video, because you can layer and put arrows and things on the video and words. And I pointed that out. I said, look at there. There's four, almost, the video is right under 2 minutes with this confrontation. And for most of that time, our 5th Congressional District Congressman never raised his head once. He played with his BlackBerry on and on and on. And it was ridiculous because, you know, in a good world, in a perfect world, you would, as the 5th Congressional District Congressman and a black man, you would have came to the mic and says, hey, yeah, those were federal funds on my watch. And that's something that we have to look at. That's something that we have to understand and find out why MnDOT and even Met Council are not functioning correctly the way
in all fairness to the congressman, let me just again remind ourselves here on point and our listening audience is that, again, just a year ago, Mr. Chisholm shared with us a trip that he made to Washington in which he met with the secretary, if you will. But before that, he met with then Congressman Oberstar, who, of course, was defeated in November of 2012 in a hell of an upset up there in northern Minnesota. But don't you remember that, and by the way, this can all be recaptured on demand because all of the programs that we've done since May of last year can be recaptured. Don't you remember Mr. Chisholm pointed out to us that they were kind of getting in Congressman Oberstar's behind about mm-hmm. the same thing, and Oberstar sent his assistant up to bring Congressman Keith Ellison into the meeting?
Yes, exactly. I remember that.
And Keith Ellison came in and gave no specific leadership or expressed concern about what Mr. Chisholm and whoever else was with him in that meeting. And I always wondered that was certainly grounds and what we call legally prima facie to have filed an administrative complaint. I was hoping that would have happened a long time ago. But I will remember Lenny sharing with us that meeting he was in. And then, you're right, I saw the pictures in the paper of Secretary LaHood, and they were all standing over there smiling, as most of the black businesses on university have been put out of business. But, hey, you know, what the heck?
That's
the leadership over there, NAACP. I'm sorry, that's right, there is no Urban League in St. Paul anymore. But anyways, don't want to be negative. Mm-hmm. But anyways, what do you think is going to happen here with this?
Well, I think that all the way around, I think Lenny is in the, working in the direction to bring, raise, build more capacity because he has all the numbers. And you have people like Wanda Kirkpatrick at Met Council who just despise Lenny. You have people at MnDOT that are, will not cooperate. But the thing is, he's exposing it little by little what's going on. The problem is, or the stopgap is when you, it goes into the politician's hands. Okay, you have State Representative Bobby Joe Champion, who now has his eyes on Linda Higgins' seat for 58 as the senator. You have Tanya Johnson, who's thinking about running as 58B, or for Linda. If what I understand, if Bobby Joe Champion supports Tanya Johnson for 58B, she will not run against him for Linda Higgins' seat.
I guess not. She could. Yeah. She wouldn't be able to because they, they're both up for election at the same time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so you have this going on, and then you don't have people focusing on this stuff because you know.
Now let me ask a question, Howard, because you know we want to. Boy, we need to give that number again. I would assume that some of these folks who sit in the chat room and listen to us. Now, has Linda Higgins indicated she's retired?
Yeah, from what I understand, that she will not be running again.
Okay, so she's retiring. She's stepping down.
Yes.
As Linda Berglund did.
Yes.
I mean, is this what we're to understand? Because, boy, I tell you, you go after a 4 or 5 term state senator in a district as Democratic as 58, boy, you're taking your life into your hands, particularly when you can't defend your own self, your own seat, your current seat as it pertains to Bobby Joe. Now, Johnson, she's a different breed because she holds no political office. Boy, this kind of planning has been going on in our community. That's their own kind of dangerous ground there.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that was going on because it was people have been calling and testing out waters, and I even had a telephone call from a Northside elder who was actually talking on the phone to State Representative Bobby Joe Champion, and he had relayed to him that IBNN's editor-in-chief, Mr. Ron Edwards, was in full support of Mr. Champion doing whatever he does in politics.
I can only speak for myself.
I didn't
even know about any of this scenario, though I do know enough about political activity, strategies, and et cetera, and history to know that what I just said, I stand by, that you got to be very careful if you commit yourself to run for a specific higher office because you're not going to be able to protect. Because, see, both of those offices are on the ballot together in November of 2012, right?
Yep, you're absolutely right.
And so you got to be careful. So I hope that Representative Champion's think tank, if you will, Brain Trust, yeah, are on top of their game. Because, boy, that's if that is not accurate information that Senator Linda Higgins is retiring, stepping down, or whatever, boy, you get caught out there. We fool around. We won't have any black representative at 58 because the white Democrats certainly have somebody poised.
Yes, they do, and they're keeping it on the down low right now. But I told them, I says, you know, there's so much confusion in North Minneapolis now with what's going on. And mm-hmm. and before we get further into that, I'd like to say one more thing about Occupy Minnesota, because we have a few people in the chat room, and I know some of you in the chat room because I see who you are. We're downtown. I don't know if you're necessarily with that Occupy Minnesota, but you've been commenting on a particular Facebook page that's been running ragged in support with OccupyMinnesota.org. For some reason or another, and mm-hmm. and you should call into the show and defend your position if you are with the group or you support them, because there were very few black folks down there. There were all, next to no black people from North Minneapolis, because you know they're missing 12,000 anyway because of the tornado stuff. So if there's some position you'd like to state, I invite you to call in at 877-572-4288, because you guys down there joining these white folks, these white hippies and beatniks who don't know what they want, and you're sitting down there talking about, oh, millionaires this, millionaires should be taxed for this, we should take this from the millionaires. Let me explain something to you. Oh, there's only, what, 0.25% of the people in the world are millionaires. And if you want to attack millionaires and folks like that, this is my point of view too, Mr. Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, these guys have opened business or took a risk with $100 in the bank, sleeping in the back of their car, and they've made multi-million and multi-billion dollar companies. So that says to me that anybody can do this. Anybody can be successful. That attack that's going on down there is skewed. It's a DFL, my opinion, is a DFL misdirection. It's just the opposite of the Tea Party. It's a liberal movement that is doing no good for anybody, because when the day's all done, you go back home and people of color don't have work. They don't have education.
Now, Don, I got to tell you, I'm sitting here in Studio A kind of laughing at you a little bit there, because I'll be doggone if that's not the same position that Herman Cain has been espousing.
Yeah.
So you and Herman are on the same page on that one, because Herman has said you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, because nobody's going to give you $1 million. And of course, Herman's right, unless you're going to go to the bank and stick it up. But anyways, that's interesting. I'd really like to – and by the way, we need to say, we didn't say it at the top, we're only going to be on for an hour today. Mm-hmm. So we basically got 30 minutes left. So if you want to kind of call, chime in, or even get a piece of us here at On Point, you only got about 30 minutes, 29 minutes left. Well, give that number again, Don. Maybe one of them want to hit that cell phone. Give us a call.
Yeah, people in the chat room, the number is 877-572-4288, and other callers, call in, 877-572-4288, if you want to have this conversation. I mean, I think Mr. Edwards and I both have thick skin. If you disagree, that's great. But if you remain silent and you start a whisper campaign behind the scenes, that's not great. Because if you have an opinion, you should let it show. It's an important piece here that we have going on. Ms. Harrison, and also, I'd like to keep it rolling to the education piece. Mm-hmm. Today, by Professor Jesse Mason, today handed me a Teachers College Record, which is the voice of scholarship and education. The title of the report was Examining Teachers' Belief About African-American Male Students in a Low-Performing High School in an African-American School District.
Okay.
And this is really shocking, because this guy, he's a big-time professor. He teaches at the University of Minnesota. He teaches at MCTC. He has a little side gig here at St. Thomas here and there. And he's part of the African-American Student Union called SAB. It's called African-American Brother-to-Brother. I'm sorry. B2B, Brother-to-Brother, which is a group of African-American students and advisors that, you know, address different things on campus that are going on.
Okay,
And so he handed me this report, and I felt very privileged that a professor ran to me with the report, because I did come up there on a radio show today. But it coincides with what we're going to get into with the adequate yearly progress for the Minneapolis Public Schools. Here goes their conclusion, which is what shocked him the most and shocked me after he told me to sit there and read it before I got up and left. It says, researchers found that school personnel overwhelmingly blame students, their families, and their communities for the minority achievement gap. In short, the school was pervaded by a culture of defeat and hopelessness. Ongoing conversations with a similar group of teachers committed to the success of African-American male students revealed that the school was not a safe space for caring teachers who wanted to make a difference in the lives of their students. Now, my argument with that whole thing is, in most black communities around the country, because this is a national report, Mr. Edwards. This is a national.
All right.
They got some teachers in the room and said, okay, it's the parents and the family and, you know, them people at home, they're not stopping. You know, they're not watching Sesame Street on Saturday morning. You know, they're not counting to their kids. They're not, you know, doing this and doing their ABCs. It's all the parents and the students, low expectations all the way around. That happens. That starts at the home.
Uh-huh.
And my thing was that I was very offended by this whole report. It's a let me see here, the 22-page report, Mr. Edwards. I got to get you a copy of it, and it really trashes the African American family, or the family structure, or in this case, the lack thereof.
Okay.
And what I explained to Dr. Mason today, I says, well, here's how I have my argument. My argument is that if you are a single parent in a house, I couldn't imagine, you know, me and my wife just had a child. I couldn't imagine anybody being a single parent, you know, after all the sleepless nights that I had, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a single parent in a home and you have a school-age children, say, child from fourth grade on up,
mm-hmm.
and in the community you live in, let's take, for example, North Minneapolis, let's throw that in there. There are no opportunities for you to make a living wage. Let's say that you graduated from high school. Let's say that you might have 2 years of college. But in order for you to work, you have to go to Maple Grove, you have to go to St. Paul, You might have to go to the other side of downtown Minneapolis just to have an opportunity. And you might have to be there at 7 or 8 o'clock. So you might have to leave at 5 or 6. Well, that child is not due in school till a particular time. You're gone. That's the first example. The second example is the parent that doesn't have a job. The parent might be looking for a job, and there's a half gallon of milk, a half gallon of Kool-Aid, and a loaf of bread. And there's nothing in the house, and there's no opportunities for that individual. How can you focus on education when at home, number one, and I'm gonna take it off the parents because it's not the parents' fault, but at home there is not the nutrients that you need, number one, to sustain a healthy mind. Number two, there's no opportunity to sustain a healthy mind. So
which
kid,
is what Michelle Obama has been saying for the last year and a half. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then so you go to school, and then you go to school, like, let's say North High. Or maybe
you may want to do Henry. I don't think we got many students at North
High.
Yeah,
let's go to Henry. Yeah. You should see all the propaganda. I'm going to get to that in a minute, though. You could crack up when you hear this. So say you go to Henry High School. We'll use Henry High School. And the teachers there have low expectations for the student, very low expectations. So if you have a teacher with low expectations for the students, they're going to teach with low expectations. So now I'm going to move over to, we have the all schools and districts, the adequate yearly progress report for 2011 based on the MCA2 test scores for these schools. And what it's showing is that, well, I look for one more thing here. What it's showing is that none of the schools in the Minneapolis Public School, let me take that back, except for, none of the schools. We have one school here with the Ronald McDonald House under the Minneapolis Public Schools inefficient data. You have disband.
What about Kenwood and Southwest?
I'm looking for them right now.
I'm
on alphabetical order here because I need to find that because there was something very interesting on that.
As you look for it, now the school board is taking a look right now as we're talking and you're looking for the information. They're talking in terms of actually reopening some of our schools because they miscalculated the potential and future enrollment numbers. I guess it didn't come to them until after the 2008 census came out. So the school district is making a commitment right now to put at least $26 million into play for the reopening of two specific schools in South Minneapolis and then Pratt over Southeast. Now, is this some way or another tie-in to a significant thrust to, and I know a lot of people, and rightly so, are troubled by the continued reference to achievement gap, whatever that's supposed to mean. By the way, let me just ask you a question. You're looking that up. What is the position of that group, MAPSE, the minority educators in Minnesota? What is their leadership, the president, anybody, is he speaking out about this? Has he held any press conference along with the NAACP's education chair and community action chairs, people like that?
Mr. Edwards, I don't even think he's even read this or looked at it.
Oh,
he's the head
of the minority educators, though.
Yeah, he's the president.
And I
think I had asked him. Matter of fact, I did ask him if he had a position in some of the stuff from Superintendent Johnson laying off 52 teachers while awarding her administrative staff over a couple hundred thousand dollars distributed in bulk sum, lump sum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there was no comment. But, Mr. Ellis, I am actually looking for Kenwood, which usually makes AYP. I don't see it on this list, and maybe I'm overlooking it here, but I've looked at it twice here within a lot of time. I do see some things that, you know how you can manipulate data?
Yeah.
Okay, here's what they have here. Making AYP. What does making AYP mean? You either don't make it or you make it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
And they have not making, making AYP and
why don't you just indicate again for maybe the international what AIP what AYP means?
AYP is the yearly average progress closing the achievement gap in schools, because, you know, for those international listeners, in the United States, we have 55 million K-12 students, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's equivalent to 2.5 Australians, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But here in the United States, less than 30% of the students are proficient in math and reading.
Mm-hmm.
Out of our students in the United States, 70% of the eighth graders can't even read at grade level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have a huge disconnect, and unfortunately, the majority of those students that are in those categories are students of color. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's where the achievement gap, because speaking of the students of color, they fall into the dropout category. And the dropout category, 8 times are more likely to go to prison, 50% are less likely to vote, and mm-hmm. and 90% are not eligible for 90% of the jobs. So when you look at it like that, there's a huge disconnect, and this isn't really an achievement gap, Mr. Edwards. This is a failure gap.
Well, certainly.
And so, I mean, how can you – I mean, I'm just looking at this report, and I just can't believe it. I'm looking here for the – I just saw the Urban League Academy.
Oh, is the Urban League still have an academy?
Yeah, they have an academy. I just saw it here, Urban League. It was kind of funny because the Urban League Academy Elementary School, which has 79% free or reduced lunch, the percentage of who get free and reduced lunch is 79%, and mm-hmm. groups identified academically is 96.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Edwards, this is the kicker of all kickers. Let me get right back there. I'm going to share this with you. On September 14th, 2011, we obviously know that these grades and these scores this year are some of the worst that they've ever been in years.
The lower 1 percentile.
Yes.
1 percentile, yeah, right.
Yes. And so the executive director of communications for the Minneapolis Public Schools, Mr. Stan Allen, sends out a press release that says, Minneapolis narrows the achievement gap for the first time in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at this thing, and I can't believe it. I said, how is that true? I mean, I have it right here in front of me.
I thought that the African American Alliance, Leadership Alliance, and the African American Leadership Group and the Black Council of the Black Churches, I thought they had basically told the community they would handle all matters pertaining to the representation of the African American community. Have they raised these questions to the board?
There has been no questions raised to anyone. You know, they just dismissed the coach of the Henry High school basketball team, and that's a huge controversy.
Yeah, that looks like it's an ugly situation. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, but anyway, getting back to African American Leadership Forum, Garen Cunningham and Trista Harris, and those that are involved in that, those folks with a significant sense of Southern stratification with nothing to undergird it with, you know, they're talking about a blueprint for action. Okay, what's a blueprint for action? Is that printing shiny magazines, Mr. Edwards? Is that having renting out the convention center for thousands of dollars and serving a bunch of people, the upper 1% of, in the community, food and breakfast and talking to them and showing them how wonderful you are? You know, what really happens when the work gets done in the community for the community? You know, what happens? Let's even look at the tornado victims. I mean, my goodness. I mean, it's wintertime. A couple times in the last 2 weeks, I had to go put my jean jacket on because I started to get a little brisk chill wearing a t-shirt mm-hmm. out of here. We have wintertime right around the corner, and we have no process in place to address some of the needs of the people in North Minneapolis. You have still a couple families living in tents behind their mm-hmm. houses over there. So getting back to the education piece, though, Mr. Edwards, there's a huge disconnect. I don't think the leadership of the Minnesota Alliance of Black School Educators, Mr. John Salisbury, can clearly see this, or does he want to see this, but I'm just going to say that there are some things that need to be done by somebody soon. And mm-hmm. don't let one of these student organizations take it and run with it, because something will change and these people will be left in the dust. I'm talking about the African American Leadership Forum, MAPC, and Brenda Casales at the
Department of Education. Yeah. Well, I assume, let me see. You said the statistics came out the 14th of September, and so we now are just about coming up on that date. So it's been a good 3 weeks. Now, the school board had a couple of meetings since then. So we're to understand here that the district has not had these test scores issues on the agenda. And where were our leadership? Where was William English and the Reverend Randolph Stanton and others who say that they are the spokespersons for educational issues pertaining to the black community? Were they in play? Have they been in play? Have we seen anything? Should we expect anything?
Yeah. I mean, that's my...
No, that's what I'm saying. Should we expect anything from them?
No. That maybe speaks to
the problem. If your leadership is not about the business of addressing those things which are, posing obstructions and barriers and et cetera, as was discussed by the Civil Rights Commission's advisory committee about a month ago, I don't know, Don, how we're going to be able to ever address this. Wow, that's sad commentary. I mean, the documentation, as I understand it from this end, was that we are actually are in the bottom one percentile. I mean, you can't go much lower with respect to failure. We're not talking about success / closing the achievement gap. We're talking about failure. And it just amazes me that we have not had any real discussion, and the district has not done anything. Has the Council of Black Minnesotans, I always like to raise this question because I remember how they, during the last legislative session, pleaded with community, along with Commissioner Lindsay of the Human Rights Department, pleaded with the community to get out and raise hell and Mau Mau so that they could keep their jobs and et cetera. Has the Council on Black Minnesotans, have they articulated any position or concern since the 14th of September?
Can we have a moment of silence for the Council of Black Minnesotans? Because that's all we're getting out of them is silence, Mr. Edwards.
It's kind of like in New Orleans when you have a funeral, the brothers go through the streets playing the music instruments.
Real slow.
And swaying. Oh, okay, so the council's gone. Okay, well, wow.
The council is I decided, Mr. Edwards, we both talked about them quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of 2011 and 2012, I'm not to write nothing about the council, Black Council on Black Minnesotans, because in my mind, they do not exist. Okay.
Well, but here's the thing now, Don. This time last year, now, our good friend Lucky Rosenblum was calling us, talking in terms of what he was, going to be doing. I haven't heard from Lucky for a while. And Lucky, if you're out there, baby, give us a call. I kind of expected Lucky and some others, because isn't there some new leadership over there? Didn't we have a new chairperson or something?
Yeah, they have a new chairperson hop in there. I can't remember her name, but, it's still... I mean, these are things you can change the people, but if you don't change the people to the right people, it's going to do the same thing. The wheel is turning the same way.
Oh, okay.
They have put no grease under the wheel. It's just turning the same in the same spot because they have the legacy heritage fund, I should say. The white folks in the legacy fund took all the power away from the Council of Black Minnesotans board. If they want to get any grants approved or anything like that, they got to go to this group of white folks over there at the Heritage Committee.
Yeah, I heard that Governor Mark Dayton had kind of signed off on that. That had happened right after the expose on the tobacco fund that nobody likes to talk about anymore and where that tobacco money went. Never did get a final report on that tobacco money. Anyways, I guess that'll come whenever people feel that it should come. The tobacco fund still in existence, isn't it? Because some fresh money of a couple hundred million. In fact, the governor had proposed during the shutdown that some of that tobacco money be directed towards retiring the deficit. So maybe we can hear something from Natalie Johnson Lee. She's the administrator for it, isn't she?
Yes, sir.
You remember Natalie Johnson Lee? Yeah, she's the administrator for the tobacco minority fund. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe we can hear something from some of our leadership. It's fall, and like you said, we got about, 10, 7, 8, 9 minutes left. I was really hoping that you would have encouraged some of the folks in the chat room to kind of pick up that telephone and give us a call and kind of give their views. Because let me just go back a tad, because I think it was so a compelling discussion. When you pointed out that we're going to probably have some changes in the legislative representation in a heavily populated legislative district 58, which of course is split A and B for the House representation, and then the entire district represented by the state senator, Ms. Higgins. And I'm just surprised that we haven't gotten any kind of calls. I'm really surprised, Don.
And then there's also a rumor out that Citywoman Barb Johnson will not be seeking re-election.
Yeah, they put that out all the time.
Okay.
Folks talk in terms that Troy Parker will be the heir apparent, et cetera. And then Barb makes her announcement, and the juggernaut rolls, and it's back to business as usual. I'm not hearing the same thing. It looks like the council president is ready and geared up for another trip. You know, normally, if politicians not going to run, they normally do as Linda Berglund did. Of course, Linda Berglund took a job with the county, which was really interesting, halfway through her term. But normally, you get some official announcements, if you will, that this person or that person is not going to run. You're not hearing that. Hearing a lot of rumors, and consequently, as you pointed out in the last 9 minutes we have, you get a lot of the manipulators and top-notch players getting your mind in another direction. The reason I say that, Don, right now our discussion within the African-American community should be about jobs and economic uplifting, right?
Yes.
And so while we spend all this time talking in terms of personal ambitions, mm-hmm. like who's going to be the next colored senator to join Jeff Hayden, if Mr. Hayden is successful out there on the South Side, rather than me talking in terms of how our people are going to be healthy enough to be able to get to the polls in November, because boy, when you're faced with hunger and economic depression and et cetera, it's really hard to get you interested to get up early on the morning and go out and vote. I think the polls are going to be packed in November of 2012. I think you can guarantee that. So I'm just wondering, is this some kind of diversion that's going on so that we don't talk about what the real agenda is? Because we really should be talking about jobs.
Yeah,
okay.
I agree.
When Secretary LaHood came here, he talked about jobs, though I didn't hear the unions, and I we're in a union state, I didn't hear the unions say that they're ready to kind of open the door for more diversity. Because, see, here's the thing, Don. You got a lot of white guys and white girls
mm-hmm.
sitting on what is called the bench in the union halls. They're first up, okay? Because you remember one of the things that you guys heard in the Tornado Relief Committee was when Scott Gray and Louis King and them, the white guy up there at Emerge, when they were talking about they were going to hire 150 black youth through the Public Works Department. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I said and took heat for it. Me and Louis clashed on the floor of the PC of the Tornado Relief. I said that was an impossibility because no way in the world them white boys in Public Works were going to allow some African-Americans to come out there and work for three-fourths the amount of what they are being paid by contract. And that turned out to be true because Public Works in the city never had any role specifically in the employment of young African-Americans, okay, irrespective of how much of a sham that was. So in the last couple minutes now, I'm just trying to get a feel. Maybe somebody will give us a call, you know what I mean, kind of lay out to us, where is the jobs plan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Job plans where the money is.
Well, I'm hearing meetings are going on. I'm hearing discussions. I'm listening to the Urban Contemporary Station, MOJ, mm-hmm. in which they're talking about light rail. Now, of course, the light rail they're talking about in North Minneapolis will not even be looked at until 2017.
And they keep
2017.
Yeah, 2017.
So, again, my question is this some kind of diversion that we're looking at here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because what our representatives and politicians and others should be talking about is jobs.
Yes.
Will our people be in a position to be hired? If the president's plan, God bless him, is able to get through the Congress of the United States and implementation begins in the most massive jobs program since the Depression days of 1935, 36, 37, 38, 39, WPA, Public Works, shouldn't we be talking about that? Isn't that what
yeah.
we should be concerned about? Getting our people to work?
I agree 100%, Mr. Evans.
Okay, so my question is, so where's the plan and why are we not having these discussions in public forums?
Well, if I could, I'm going to try to answer that in my opinion, Ms. Irvin, here in the last 6 minutes or so. First of all, you have, where there should be business people planning jobs, we have social workers.
Yeah, okay.
That's one of the first problems. I guess that's one of the biggest problems. Second of all, you mentioned about the summer jobs here for the youth.
Yeah.
Mr. Edwards, I had uncovered a couple of weeks ago after sneaking around on the down low that, you know, all that money that was being raised for this
$450,000 by Mr. King personally, right? Yeah.
Yes, to hire all these youth. Why would we be raising money to hire youth when the programs were already existent and already funded?
Well, that question was asked by me in a meeting, and of course, Mr. King indicated I was out of order. You know, not wanting to give the naysayers and the snipers, you know, fresh targets, if you will. We said, you know, we'll stand down, and we talked about it on programs under our control and et cetera. I don't know. That's a doggone good question. I know that the tornado relief group is sitting on, I'm not sure of the figure anymore, by the way. Is it 300,000 or 600,000? Because I was told in a meeting in September it was 600,000. Now I'm hearing and seeing documentation that says 300,000. So apparently they went through 300,000 in the last 30 days?
Yeah.
So a lot of victims got helped out here, right? A lot of our people got helped and got assistance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, why Star Tribune then keep writing these articles talking about all of this anger and rage because people aren't getting helped?
Yeah,
that's where I get confused. I'm not smart enough to understand why, but I get confused. It makes an old black man like me get confused.
Yeah, same here, because I was looking at that too. At first, you know, they have what they say in the streets. They have body parts on people's chins, and then the next time they're talking about the anger. You know, you get this promotional story about everything's going good. You get pictures with the Minnesota Vikings before the game, And now the next thing that's coming out is that people are upset. There's an 81-year-old woman suffering from depression behind a tornado. There's kids.
Mental health. Yeah.
Yeah. Mental health. Let's get them over to you.
In fact, they got 200,000. The players got 200,000 just last week for the mental health problems of the Negro, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so the thing is, Mr. Edwards, we're going to have to figure out or have someone figure out. I mean, we don't have any functioning agencies that – with the power or the strength enough to go in and demand an audit of everything and a report of where this money's actually going. So, I mean, we're stuck. We're back. We don't have a congressman that will even hold a press conference. So, I mean, what do we do? I mean, we're stuck. Other note real quick here, I just like to say that I was at the opening of the University of Minnesota UROC, the Community Day, and I got a chance to take a picture with the new president of the University of Minnesota. Taylor, I think his last name is pronounced.
It's a German name.
It's going to be very interesting because I think the University of Minnesota, UROC, and the people inside of it and the people on the office of the senior vice president is going to roll over really quick.
This
guy is data-driven, and I don't think he's taking no crap. And so let's watch that for the next couple of months here over the holidays and see what happens with that.
Well, certainly. But in the meanwhile, you know, what my position is here in Studio A, you know, I'm looking to find out when black metropolitans are going to be able to find employment. And, where's the job strategy? Where's the plan? I'm not talking about the independent strategy that we see coming out of the Tornado Relief Committee where the money is going back and forth being exchanged amongst frat brothers, sorority sisters, and et cetera. I'm talking about putting to work these people that desperately need employment and economic opportunity. I just don't see it. I mean, if you want to help the president, if you will, it looks like, particularly in a Democratic enclave like Minneapolis and St. Paul, that we'd be seeing all kinds of rational, if you will, and tactically successful strategies. I'm confused, Don. I'm just befuddled. And also, let me say, as we begin to wrap in the last minute, you know, last month we've happened to have the phone lines open, and I was really disappointed today. I thought, you know, opportunity for folks, as you pointed out earlier, to really raise some tough questions to us. Nothing happened. Wow.
Yeah. The toll-free number, we'll be back next week at 4 p.m. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow to Black Focus 2 with Mr. Ron Edwards at 3 p.m., and then tune in to Black Focus on Minneapolis on Minneapolis Television Network at 5 p.m., and Mr. Edwards also has a a weekly column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. You'd have to get it in print to read it. It's really good. And then also don't forget to read the Independent Business News Network. And I also have a new blog started. It's called Tornado Me This.
Which shows by the way, on our program, The Last Second, tune in tomorrow on our 3 o'clock program. After our program, we talk in terms of the meeting in Portland, Oregon, leading to the move of the Minnesota Vikings at the conclusion of this season. Oops.
Ooh.
Tune in. Catch it.
Okay.
Take care. All right, Don. Thank you.
Thank you.